This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this beautiful Saturday morning. Really, it's going to be a great day here in Winnipeg. Settle in for the next 3 hours as we bring you all the latest NHL Stanley Cup playoff news. We'll touch on the ice caps as well. Really, we got you covered top to bottom on anything hockey related. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news, Stanley Cup playoff news, anything under the sun related to hockey is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good morning to you both.
Good morning, and you know that it's going to be a beautiful day. It's already a beautiful day because there's this fan in the studio here. And it's
By fan, you don't actually mean like a cheering audience member, but like a fan, like an air conditioning blowing.
Electric fan, yes.
Okay. And so that should make that clear.
Have we ever seen that on ever? I don't think I've ever seen that on. It's always in here.
It's in here, but usually it hasn't been warm enough since probably last September.
Yeah. So that's how we know it's going to be very nice out. Yes. In addition to just going outside and seeing the blue skies and, you know, the fact that it's going up to 30, but it's awesome. I mean, people here in Winnipeg deserve it, I think, more than anywhere else in the world. It was the worst winter in 100 years, so, you know, what better way to celebrate it than by talking hockey, right?
Exactly. The coldest game on ice with the hottest day outside. It makes perfect sense. Richard, good morning.
Is it the hottest game on ice?
I don't know. That was the slogan once, right?
Yeah, not the coldest game on ice.
Well, it is the coldest game on ice.
Is it? Wouldn't it be colder to, like, sports that are outside on ice?
Well, you can play hockey outside.
You can. Anyhow.
That was good. We're off to a good start. We're off to a rollicking start. A dark night in the NHL last night. No games last night. This will be the last time it happens. I think from now on they go every second night, as they should have from the start.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they decided to kill any momentum by not playing games on Tuesday and Friday. Your guess is as good as mine, but we'll leave that to the geniuses in the NHL front office. Let's start in the Western Conference. We got the Los Angeles Kings and the Chicago Blackhawks. That series is tied up at one. You know, that was a game on, I guess that would be Thursday night. Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
My days are getting confused. It seems like about a month ago at this point in time. That was a game on Wednesday night that it looked like the Blackhawks had everything in control. It was 2-0. Then in the last 21 and a half minutes of the game, you haven't seen a Chicago Blackhawks team get shellacked like that in, 5 years?
Well, it's been a while, Drew, and L.A. became a desperate team, didn't want to go down 2-0 to the defending Stanley Cup champions and turned it on, and I think Chicago thought they were a little bit more free and clear of the Kings, especially, as you mentioned, kind of controlling the play for a large part of the first 30, 40 minutes of the game. I mean, there's a couple of plays in that game that if they happen, I don't think LA has a chance to come back. It's the save by Jonathan Quick on Brent Seabrook. It's the Toffoli taking it off the line early in the game. I mean, it could be 3 or 4-0, and they wouldn't have come back likely. But that late goal in the second period really does you in. You know, you have to be able to get that period and play with the lead. And when you give them a sign of hope, we've seen it in the NHL playoffs this year, when you give them a sign of hope, that's an issue. LA, though, plays their best when desperate. It's amazing. You know, they get down 3-0 to San Jose. They win 4 in a row. They play L.A. They get down. So Anaheim, they get down 3-2. 3-all, 4-3. Anytime they feel like they're too close. Like, I think, you know, don't get me wrong, you never want to lose. But against Chicago, it's different going down 2-0, 3-0 to Chicago than it is San Jose. Because I think L.A. believes they have the mental edge over San Jose. I don't think they believe they have any mental edge really over Chicago. It's that whoever just plays better. So I think they turned it on there. And I think Chicago got a little bit too comfortable. And it's going to be a very interesting game 3 tonight to see how, you know, obviously Andrew Shaw is going to play. That's a huge addition for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And especially up the middle, because LA is so strong up the middle, and that's a big advantage that they have against Chicago in the series.
Yeah, Richie, I think the point for me that resonates the most is how resilient they are, but also that if you have a 2 or 3 goal lead on this team, that you're not safe. And it could have easily been 4-0 after a couple of periods. And Jonathan Quick was amazing. You mentioned the save on Seabrook. And this team, and you got to give tons of credit to that Jeff Carter, Tyler Toffoli, Tanner Pearson line, who we've been talking about now for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Carter especially, to me, he is the guy that is emerging as the MVP of this team. You'd expect it to be Dustin Brown. And that's not no offense to Anze Kopitar, who's leading the NHL in scoring right now, but Jeff Carter is a guy who's been there with this team the last 3 years, right? So, I mean, it's this team can come back. They can score goals. We've seen them score goals in bunches. And, you know, going back to even game one, the game that the Hawks won, I thought the Kings, for many parts of that game, were controlling the play. And, you know, it was a couple of turnovers, the Jake Muzzin turnover. I was watching the game with Richie, and I made the comment. I thought it was just awesome that Jake Muzzin got the winning goal in game two because of that unfortunate giveaway that led to the Jonathan Toews goal, the third goal in game one. And I thought that they responded really well. And they have injuries on the back end, and they're managing to get the job done. And, you know, we thought it was going to be a long series. I think maybe it was just the fact that they scored those six unanswered goals and in the fashion that they did, which was a little bit surprising. But even though you can throw all the regular season stuff, and I know going into the playoffs that was the question, are these guys going to score? Is Gabrick going to be productive? And, you know, we've seen certain players struggle. A guy like Mike Richards has only really started to get it going after the second round. But this is a good team, guys. I mean, this team has won the Cup and been to the conference mm-hmm. finals the last 2 years. And it's a veteran team with the best goaltender, or arguably the best goaltender in the league. So we shouldn't be surprised that they're sticking around with the Hawks here. They're a good team. And, you know, I think ultimately the Hawks are going to win the series. But, you know, the Kings have shown the Hawks, okay, this is a series. You're not going to win this series in 4 or 5 games.
I think that wake-up call, you know, that, you know, the Kings, I think, gave the Blackhawks a wake-up call. The Blackhawks have been, you know, they've won what? They'd won, you know, they had some trouble with Minnesota, but you never really felt that that series really was in jeopardy. You know, and they had some trouble in St. Louis in the first round, but they really dominated the last, you know, four games.
They outplayed
them
in 5 of the 6 games, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that was the first real sort of time the Blackhawks have been absolutely dominated during this playoffs. And now I'm interested to see how they're going to respond to that tonight. You know, what Blackhawks team are you going to see? Are you going to see the Stanley Cup champions who, you know, get punched in the jaw and come back and then end up dominating a series? Or is there going to be some lingering ramifications for being so thoroughly dominated on home ice?
I don't think so, Drew. I think the Blackhawks will be just fine today. I think another aspect of this is an extra day off.
Sure.
And the Blackhawks play their horses. LA's a little bit deeper. They are. They have better depth than Chicago does. And Chicago has good depth. They have
up
better
front, depth. In particular.
Yes, that's what I mean. Well, no.
Well, I guess Willie Mitchell's back in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, up front in particular. Yeah, that's
they miss Robin
statement.
Regier, though.
They do miss Robin Regier. There's no doubt about that. Daryl Sutter said this week, you know, if he could skate with one leg, he'd be out there.
Right.
But depth-wise, LA has better third and fourth line.
Well, you've made this comment before, Richie, that not just the top two centers, if you look at their center position, they might be the strongest in the league with
probably
Jarrett Stoll as your third line center.
It's maybe the best third line center in the league, Jarrett Stoll. Love what he does. He's able to contribute in so many ways. Face-offs, being physical, smart defensively, can contribute, got a big shot. He's a good player. And he's got the respect of his teammates. And LA is able to rely on that depth. And, you know, you talk about Carter and Pearson and Toffoli. They've really been, obviously, a great line. Tanner Pearson is kind of similar to his former Barry Colt teammate Mark Scheifele in that they both have been able to improve their foot speed. If you watch Tanner Pearson now, he can get up and down pretty quick. Mark Scheifele, if you watch him, you know, he had that lack of foot speed as well, and they both seem to have improved it pretty quickly, which is impressive. That was an aside. But if you look back at it, Chicago, if they were, you know, you look back, we talked about to Scott Powers at ESPN Chicago about how many minutes Toews and Kane and those guys were playing. Well, hey, 2 days, I don't care when they played those minutes. They played them. 2 days off, give them some extra rest time. Chicago relies on their top dogs. Not LA doesn't, but Chicago relies on those four real top dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives them a nice little rest right now, and I think that's going to benefit them. So I don't see any lingering effects.
Then you got game three tonight, and this is, you know, these two teams certainly are familiar with each other. They played together last year in this Western Conference final again.
Absolutely.
And we sort of saw a similar thing where it was a close series at the start, but then the Blackhawks were able to take it over towards the end and won game six.
The Kings couldn't keep up foot speed wise last year.
Is that going to, and so do the additions really of Gabrick, Pearson, and Toffoli, because those are the big
those do help you in that.
That's my question.
Those do help you.
Is it help you enough that it changes the I mean, obviously, if LA wins, it's not like a, you know, a coffee dropping, coffee spilling upset that we never saw coming. But is it enough to overcome what, you know, what the juggernaut and the dynasty that the Blackhawks have built? Because this is a dynasty.
If they win, it's a dynasty.
Well, even two in
no,
the last.
No, you have to win more than two to be a dynasty.
Well, in this
three.
Day and age, in the end,
three.
Okay.
Minimum.
I think you can even argue four.
No, well, I think three this day and age. You need to do a three in like a 5-year span to be a dynasty this day and age.
And also, Drew's making a good point here, though. I think what you're trying to say is, especially if they get to the finals this year and win it, then it's a dynasty. But even
because if LA wins this year, is that a dynasty then? They have two dynasties at the
exactly.
same. I don't think so.
Dynasty, you don't want to throw that out so loosely. But the point here is that the Chicago Blackhawks and both the LA Kings and the Chicago Blackhawks, for that matter. They're not content with just getting to where these teams want to win the cups. These guys have veteran guys that have won cups before, and they want to win cups again. And you know, you talk about the foot speed, and you know, Toffoli was on the Kings last year, and he contributed last year. But you look at some of these other guys, and you know, the Kings they're not the same style as the Hawks. It's a different style, and I think when they opened it up. And you can. It's easy to say, okay, you know, you could really see their speed, right? But I mean, this is a desperate team. They had to get the goal, and you know, a couple of those goals were on the power play, and they're not going to compete with the Hawks as far as speed wise goes. That's just they have some fast guys, but I think it's about using that. And I think you know, when you look at who's owned the neutral zone, really, and I don't think really any team has the advantage in that respect. I think you know, you look at the Chicago Blackhawks; they're going to get stretch passes. They're going to be a tough team to score off of the rush. Yeah. And I think you look at the LA Kings, and you know, right now they're ready to go. They're healthy aside from Regier. And you know they're scoring on multiple lines, and you know they're going to give the Hawks a run for their money here, and you know, it's going to be fun to watch.
Let's go to break. When I come back, I want you guys to.
When you come back. What about us? Are we coming
when
back?
We
too?
Come back. Okay. When we come back, I wanted you guys to discuss if you think that Chicago changes who they focus on shutting down. Do they change the Keith and Seabrook pair to maybe go up against Carter, Toffoli, and Pearson? Save that thought till after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Now up by Martinez. Feeds left circle. Muzzin with a shot. Score! Jake Muzzin from the left circle appeared to beat Corey Crawford on the short side. Another power play goal for the Kings here in the third period.
Courtesy of our friends at KTLK, Jake Muzzin's game-winning goal propelled the Los Angeles Kings to the victory on Wednesday night against the Chicago Blackhawks, tied that series up at one game apiece with game three in that series, of course, going tonight back in Los Angeles. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Producer Tim getting us on and off the air. Like the expert that he is. Gentlemen, before we went to break, I asked you, do you think that the Blackhawks changed their focus? You know, in games one and two, the sort of expectation was Keith and Seabrook versus Gabrick, Kopitar, Brown. Do you think they now focus more putting Keith and Seabrook up against Pearson, Carter, and Toffoli, or the status quo will leave it be as one bad game?
I think you get into trouble when you start moving around guys based on, you know, two games. As you mentioned, Anze Kopitar, at the end of the day, he's the best player on LA. And you want your best players to go up against the other team's best players. If Chalmerson and Oduya can't control the Carter-Pearson-Toffoli line, then you got other issues. But I don't think, I mean, obviously you have the Richards and Williams and King line too, which is a very talented third line. Third line, really. But at the end of the day, that'll cause matchup issues with guys like with Letty and Roosevelt. So right, Letty scored that nice goal, but Letty has, you know, spotty play at times, and Roosevelt certainly isn't the best in terms of foot speed, so he can be taken advantage of in that respect. Granted, if they're matching up that line against the Williams, King, and Richards line, that's not a fast line anyways. So Chicago is going to take their chances. I don't think they hate the matchups. I just don't think they like the way they played. I'm more concerned if I'm Chicago about the depth scoring up front. I really am, because you're relying so heavily on your top guys to perform that You know, there's line, and I know they got a goal from Letty. I know they got a goal from Ben Smith. But at the end of the day, you're relying on your big guys so much, and you're not getting a ton of complimentary scoring that you worry if the big guys can't score once in a while. If it dries up at the wrong time, you get behind the eight ball.
Does that speak to the importance of getting Andrew Shaw back in the lineup?
It does, to a point. I mean, Shaw's not your 75 point guy, but he does provide depth in the roster. He does go to the net. He does certain things. You know, the talented players on Chicago. You know, obviously Taves, Hossa, Sharp. Although Sharp really hasn't done a heck of a lot, and I know they're bouncing out the lines.
He's got six points in 14 games.
Well, how much of that do you think is Sharp playing with guys who?
Yeah, I mean playing with Regan and Versteeg. Yeah, how much are you going to do? I understand that Regan didn't play much in the season in the NHL at all, and Versteeg is like a shadow of his former self.
Yeah. Well, Versteeg was a healthy scratch earlier in the playoffs.
Right.
I think you're right, Richie. I think if you look at what has got the Hawks to this point, really, and the line combination has been, for over the years, has been Jonathan Toews with Patrick Sharp on his left side.
That's right.
And Joel Quenneville likes to do that as far as spreading out, I guess, spreading the wealth, if you want to look at it like that. And Andrew Shaw, I believe, is going to line up as the second line center, and then you drop Hanzus out. And
well, because he's a fourth line center, not a second. That's the thing. They've needed a second-line center for 4 years because they're so talented everywhere else, especially on the wings. They've been able to overcome that. Most other teams, if not all of them, could not overcome not having anything close to a second-line center.
Right.
Yeah, and tonight's game, you know, going back to L.A., it's all about getting the offense going again. And you're talking about getting Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and Hossa going. And, you know, this team, I think, right now has to kind of solidify those lines, because the LA Kings, they've got their scoring lines all set, and they've kept Kopitar with Gabrick, Gabrick and Dustin Brown, and then they've got Toffoli and Pearson, flanking Jeff Carter, and then we talked about the Jarrett Stoll, Justin Williams, Trevor Lewis line. So I mean, they've got their forward line solidified.
They haven't even mentioned Mike Richards yet, but
right? And Mike Richards is playing fourth line center, which is unbelievable.
And Dwight King, who was the hero of the playoffs a couple years ago.
Well, the thing is, as just quickly on that, the thing about Gabrick is he allows. We talk about the speed element. That line, I mean, Kopitar is not a bad skater, but he's not the fastest guy. He's not going to burn you, right? Mm-hmm. But when he gets going, he's absolutely fine. It's kind of like a Ginla that way. You know, you get going. Skating isn't the drawback, but once you get going.
But he doesn't have the quickest first step.
Yeah, Nash too. Same kind of idea. And Dustin Brown is, you know, going to be rugged and get in on there. But when you have Gabrick, you have the threat of the stretch pass. You have the threat of getting beat wide. And if you take a half a step back on a 3-on-2 out of concern that he's going to beat you wide, you give somebody else a half a step more room in the slot, low slot or high slot. And that these little things make a huge difference. And that's why not only Gabrick has played so well with so many important goals, Kopitar has been able to flourish. Because what they were doing before with Kopitar is simply creating offense off of the cycle. Mm-hmm. And what Gabrick has done has been able to allow them to create offense off the rush as well.
It improves the spacing. And you talk about, you know, you hear about basketball, they always talk about spacing in the half court offense. When you have that guy, you know, in this case Gabrick, who's got a little more speed, it improves the spacing on the ice and allows a better scoring, the players to get into better scoring lanes, better scoring positions.
Yeah, and that's more reason why I think that Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook will stay matched up
against
the Kopitar, Gabrick, Dustin Brown line, because Duncan Keith can skate with the best of them. He's an excellent defenseman. We all know that. And I think, you know, Jarmelson and Oduya, they can handle the Carter, Toffoli, Pearson line.
See, let me get on that. You mentioned Oduya, though. Oduya's been a great addition to them. But don't you have concerns about when he has to defend?
Well, that was his problem in Winnipeg. No, you're right, Richie. That was his problem with the Jets. And tremendous skater. Johnny Oduya is a tremendous skater, formerly played in the Swedish Elite League.
Good passer, too.
Great first pass. And that is his problem, and you know, he's not your typical...
He's not big.
Your typical physical defenseman, and against a team like the LA Kings, when you're going up against Jeff Carter...
They're all big.
Hey, guys, at the Olympics, we saw every single country try to defend Jeff Carter, and not many countries had success. I mean, the guy's 6'4", he can skate like the wind, he's a dangerous guy. To me, Carter is the key. Shutting Carter down, to me, is the key to this series for the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, you saw him... Hat trick and 4 points. I'm sure one of them was an empty netter. But to me, he's been the best player in the series so far, albeit it's only been a couple games here. But, you know, he can be dominant. And I know that, you know, he had a rough time in Philly and all that. But we know how successful he was since he's come over from the Columbus Blue Jackets. So, I mean, they got to shut him down, and I don't think that's going to – I mean, maybe if the matchups, because of the last change, you might see Keith and Seabrook out there at times, but I don't think – that it's going to be a conscious effort to put those guys up against Carter.
Right. And Chalmerson's a very good stay-at-home defenseman. Moves very well for the stay-at-home defense, for a stay-at-home defenseman. And, you know, he's not going to be the most dominant offensive player by any means, but it's a nice compliment. It's a nice compliment to Oduya. They play very well together. But when you have to defend more, and again, Chicago never defends, guys. That's why. I mean, Oduya has been a great addition to their squad because of who has the puck all the time. He fits in so well. But if you drop Johnny Oduya to a poor team that doesn't have the puck a lot, the Jets 2 years ago, that's exactly a problem. He's defending 35 minutes of the night, and he doesn't look as good. Yep. So the situation certainly is a factor there. We haven't even talked about goaltending, really.
That's what I was going to bring up next. How, you know, obviously Corey Crawford's not his best night on Wednesday night.
Corey Crawford has demonstrated an ability to come back and perform very well. And I like Corey Crawford. I think he's established himself as a go-to guy, and I don't have any concerns about a bad game. I don't. I know people still don't want to classify him as a top netminder.
They should.
I think he's there.
So they should.
I know he's no Jonathan Quick.
Ask Huss from, of course, you know who Huss is, from Hustler Lawless, who he thinks should have been.
Thanks for clarifying.
Who should have been the MVP of last year's playoffs? He'd tell you Corey Crawford, and I wouldn't disagree with that. He was excellent last year, and you could make the argument that. Well, and I would make that argument. Quick is a better goalie, but
for sure.
Corey Crawford is not a weakness by any stretch of the imagination. He's got a Stanley Cup. I mean, he's the number one goalie.
Yes.
I mean, there's no. I don't have any concern.
He's prone to these bad games every now and then, but like you said,
yeah. But so is Marty. So is Marty Brodeur.
Yeah,
I mean,
fine.
Every goalie is prone to a bad game once in a while.
I mean, sure. Nobody talked. We haven't talked about the next series, but nobody's talked about Lundqvist and that Markov goal last game. Nobody's talked about that goal.
That was a bad goal.
It was a terrible goal.
Yeah. It was not. It was not.
And
like Lundqvist
was one of the best goalies in the game.
We'll talk about it next. We'll get
but
to that.
But that puck went under his pad.
Yeah, it was a bad goal.
Got to have that.
Absolutely have to have.
No,
have
you haven't
that.
Heard anybody talk
no,
about that.
Nobody called him out. Yeah, Lundqvist makes that save 99 times out of 100.
Maybe more, like a higher percentage than that. That's how often he makes that save.
Even though, you know, three of the four goalies, Drew, are the three best goalies in the league, these guys aren't immortal. I mean, these guys can let in a bad. I mean, remember the back in the day, Marty Brodeur, you know, I remember he used to let in a lot of early soft goals. It happens.
That's
guys will bounce back.
People like to, you know, look at one game and then kind of lose perspective, I think. And that's one thing that these coaches and these GMs and the players can't do. You can't lose perspective of what you got you there. And that's, I think, the key to what we're talking about right now, Drew, is for these first two segments, talking about Chicago and talking about L.A. Both of these teams can't get away from what they do well. It's a 1-1 series. You're playing a best-of-5. Home ice. You're concerned about in reality, I mean, L.A.'s depth. They're not too concerned about matchups. And Chicago's back-end depth, they're not really concerned about matchups either. If you can get one of Chalmerson or Keith out there at all times, and, you know, and that's all you need, these guys can play big minutes if they have to, then you're not too concerned. If you're a top-heavy team like the teams that come into the playoffs, like Dallas and things like that, when you're really relying on the Sagan line too much, then you got to worry more about home ice. Even if you're Anaheim, you got to worry more about home ice because of Getzlaff and all those guys and the matchups you have. But when you're these teams and you've got Hossa on one line, right, and you've got Kane on another line, or you've got Kopitar on one line and Carter on another line, you don't have to worry as much about that.
Before we go to break quickly, is this game more important for one team versus the other?
No. Both of these teams.
This is going to be a long series.
Yeah, seven gamer, I think.
This is going to be a long series, and I think that, you know, even though the you know, you could say that LA's got the momentum, I'm a strong believer that momentum doesn't carry over from one game to another, and especially in an early series like this. So I think that, you know, this isn't. I would be surprised if this game is a 3 or 4 goal differential. I could see this one going to OT.
This series is a war, and these are the two probably best teams. These are the two best teams in the NHL right now, and I mean, like, considering all the other teams, probably the two best teams. Like, I don't know if anybody would beat these two teams right now.
I think what factors in now, Richie, is that LA had to go through Anaheim and San Jose.
Seven games both.
Right? Mm-hmm. And we know who Chicago went through, so, I mean, not exactly those
LA's
teams.
Had a harder roll, a harder road to get to this point. Game 3 goes tonight, and then it's every second night after tonight. Before we go to break, got to give a shout-out, not hockey-related, got to give a shout-out to Jeannie Bouchard, tennis player, French Open, starts Monday. She won her first WTA title earlier today. She won the Nuremberg Cup.
So way to go, Eugenie.
What about Rory McIlroy and Alexandra Wozniacki?
I think that's Caroline Wozniacki.
Oh, is that her name?
Yeah.
Does Daniel Nestor still play?
Doubles, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. Anyways, let's go to break.
Don't you have a doubles team, Drew?
I used to in your life.
Actually, Drew's a good tennis player.
Yeah, Drew is a good tennis player.
Good serve, right?
Yeah.
Good serve? Spin serve?
No, more just the all-round game.
Yeah, good player.
All-round.
Good backhand.
I know.
Just Drew serves, and if you hit it back, he lets it go by. Yeah,
I prefer getting meals served to me is what happens. That's what I prefer nowadays. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, Robin Short, St. John's Telegram, is going to join us to talk about the Ice Caps. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 9:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Drew, did you have a little corned beef in your sausage?
Yeah, store a little bit of turkey breast in there in case of emergency and a little...
Came up there in that Bernstein's read.
Yeah, we're trying to get a hold of Robin Short. We'll bring him to you momentarily, but I think there is an issue that we need to discuss. And Ezzy, I'm not sure you really did us proud earlier this week.
Ooh, you're going to bring that up.
Yeah. You were involved in a chicken wing eating contest.
That's right.
I believe it's a weekly occurrence for you.
Ezzy didn't realize that you don't eat the bones.
Oh.
So you're just swallowing them whole?
Oh, I understand. Yeah. He would have been better if he just swallowed the chicken wing whole like a duck.
So as he went with his manager, Jimmy Hart, or Hustlerama.
Yeah.
And
he wore his formal attire. He wore his tuxedo t-shirt.
Tuxedo t-shirt.
Yeah.
And he ate 18 wings in 5 minutes and finished 8th out of 11 contestants.
That's what I'm saying.
Why don't you recap?
Well,
18 doesn't seem like a lot because they're so small. Like, I feel like you would eat 25.
It's in a short period of time, right? Think about 5 minutes. It's not that long, right?
That's
like, you think 5 minutes, you think it's a long time.
What did the winner eat in how long?
The winner.
Is it 5 minutes total?
40 in 5 minutes.
So you were more than half behind the winner.
But he was the defending champion. And this was my first ever chicken wing competitive, competition.
Nobody believes that for a second.
Well, I've done this.
You've been involved in competitive eating for years.
But the only problem is there was no audience before, and now there is an audience. But no, I mean it was really fun. I still think that I could eat more. I don't think I could do 40 in 5 minutes, but I think I could get close to 30.
What kind of wings were they?
They were hot wings.
Ooh, okay, that makes it a little harder.
Yeah, so I mean
shots of Pepto beside it or what?
It's funny, the guy that I was beside actually pulled out, like, right before we started, he pulled out a thing of Tums, and I'm like, hey, man, I might need those, and
he came prepared with his own Tums?
Probably the best part of this story, though, the chicken wing eating competition, because Huss asked me to be in the chicken wing eating competition for him last year.
Kobayashi, your name was.
Yep, Kobayashi, and last year, Huss only ate 6 wings. And
what?
Chris Zook of the University
in 5 minutes?
Chris Zook of the University of Manitoba, shout out to Chris Zook for putting on the wing competition, was making fun of Huss for only eating 6 wings.
Six? That's weak.
But you'll like this story. After the wing eating competition, Huss had a couple wings too. I had a couple leftover wings. We went to DQ and washed it down with a nice little twist cone.
Wow. I don't even want to know what you had for dinner that day. But before we get Robin Short on here,
I had chicken wings.
Ken Weeb wrote a good article in The Sun about Josh Morrissey's progression.
Yes.
And I think that's interesting to hear that, I haven't really seen him play at all, aside from pockets of World Junior Championship games. He seems to be acquitting himself quite well in St. John's. And I think that's important for the development. First of all, for his development, but also for the organization. Left side of defense is a hole. And that's what he plays. And if he's able to, play on the power play, although that's not, I don't think, a huge need for the team right now, and move the puck out of their own zone, which is a need for sure, he's going to get some consideration for making the big squad next year.
Yeah, and this is for Josh Morrissey. This is all about experience. And we talked about this last week, and you guys were making fun of me about, going on a long playoff run. But for Josh Morrissey, this is just more experience at the pro level. Mm-hmm. And, he gets the taste of winning. And, you know, Prince Albert Raiders were knocked out earlier out of the WHL playoffs. And it's just experience for him. And, you know, Richie mentioned that, you know, it's going to help him. It doesn't mean that he's going to necessarily make the Jets next year, because he might end up going back to the WHL. And, you know,
he doesn't have strong competition on the left side, though. Grant Clitsam, and if they bring back one of Ellerby or Party, and who else?
I think prior to these AHL playoffs, I don't think the Jets really were considering it. I thought they figured he probably would need another year in junior. But now, they're sort of in a rock and a hard place, the organization, in that he's probably too good for juniors.
Oh, yeah.
He can't play in the AHL because of his age. So he's caught in that trap. And who did we have on? I think you asked them this question, Richie. I can't remember who we had on about changing that rule, if they'd like to see that rule changed.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it was Jay Feaster.
Jay Feaster. Okay, we had Jay Feaster on, and asked him about that.
Why not, Drew, let a guy like Josh Morrissey, not just Josh Morrissey, I'm just using him as an example.
Because you ruined the CHL, probably. That's the problem. It's a relationship issue.
Yeah, but if each team's allowed, you know, one player every X number of years to do that, it's only for, you know how in the CHL they have the exceptional underage rule for somebody like...
I agree with you, by the way.
John Tavares.
I think it should be changed. Yeah. I do agree.
Connor McDavid,
exactly. Yeah. I think the AHL, the NHL, and the CHL could sit down and come up with some sort of formula that works at the same time to allow for that one player every so many years to go play in the AHL when they're underage.
I don't know if that's be an exemption. I think it just needs to be changed. I just don't think it will be.
Well, you know, back to your point, though, I think it's a good one about Josh Morrissey in the left side. Look at Olli Maatta in Pittsburgh coming out of the London Knights. And then you look at Hampus Lindholm, who was a first-round pick, was not supposed to make the Anaheim Ducks. And you look at some of these guys, it's not, you know, crazy to think that if a 19-year-old defenseman and if Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger and the Jets think that he's ready, he could start. And obviously, he's got to have a good training camp. There's no reason why he wouldn't have a good training camp. I think that's a possibility, and I agree. I think that has changed. I thought Josh Morrissey was going to spend another year in junior with Prince Albert, and you know, but you also have to ask the question: does he need another year? Should he play this year? You don't want to put him in a position to fail, and they're going to have to make that decision. But I think Rich makes a good point that, you know, he could probably help them out on the left side there. But then you also have now two defensemen, you know, 19 and 20 years old in your top six. That could present some problems.
And you have the burning the entry-level aspect of it, burning the first-driven entry-level deal, and does he play over the threshold of games that takes away, puts him a year closer to UFA if you're thinking long-term. So, I mean, Cheveldayoff has a 13-year contract, so he probably is thinking long-term. But those are factors that are to be taken into account. I think it's far too early to jump to that. I just want to point out that it's possible. It comes down to free agency, Ezzy. They need to address the left side. They need to sign somebody or make a trade to add the left side. Even if you think he is a guy who's capable of playing, you certainly don't want to put him in your top four next year and rely on him and put that much pressure on him if you have aspirations, which they apparently do, of making the playoffs.
Let's say he comes to Winnipeg and he has a very good training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And the team decides to still send him down.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's fine, too.
That's fine.
But when you say send down back to Prince Albert.
I'm talking back to juniors.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Is there more for him to learn and to develop while playing in the
juniors?
Sure,
go win. And maybe he gets traded to a contender. I don't know Prince Albert. I don't think they were that good this year. But maybe he gets traded to a big-time contender, and he's playing for the Edmonton Oil Kings in the Memorial Cup, and he experiences that. Does it ever hurt? Does it really ever hurt to play more?
As far as his actual game goes, though... Yeah, he's probably going to learn more at the pro level. He's the best. He was the best defenseman in the WHL this year as a 19-year-old, and that's what you'd want to see. You'd want to see him win, get even better, continue being the captain, the leader of that team. But I think, you know, and again, we haven't watched him play as much as we'd like. I mean, you catch WHL games whenever you can. He's probably ready, and it really comes down to that. If a 19-year-old defenseman is ready to play in the NHL, forget the age, forget his contract status, right, Richie? I mean, if he's ready to go, you put him in the lineup.
I've met him. I haven't seen him play really more than small periods of time. I don't really know anything about his game too much. I know about his game. I haven't seen it firsthand. Met him, though. He's very polished. He's wide-bodied. You know, he seems physically fairly mature for his age and very polished. So, I mean, maturity-wise, it seems, and I think that's obviously a factor in them drafting him. It seems like something to consider. But at the end of the day, it doesn't alleviate the need to address that hole on the roster prior to training camp.
We're having trouble finding Robin Schwartz. Hopefully we'll track him down before the show ends at noon. For now, let's go to break. When we come back, big changes in Vancouver. They have a new general manager. We'll talk about Jim Benning on the other side of these commercial messages. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Quarter to 10 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Online, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and St. John's Ice Caps news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the show from the St. John's Telegram, Robin Short. Robin, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. No trouble.
Robin, obviously Game 1 goes tonight between the Ice Caps and the St. John's, the Ice Caps and the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre Penguins in the Eastern Conference Final. Ice Caps have had 6 days off since they won their semifinal over Norfolk. Do you think this rest will be to their advantage, or is there a concern that they may have a letdown and it might take them a few minutes to get back up to the playoff speed?
I don't think there's any doubt that there's going to be a little bit of rust buildup, but the coaching staff under Keith McCambridge, they've been running some real brisk practices this week just to ensure that the players do indeed keep their edge. But as you know, there's a difference between practicing and then there's a difference when you go out and actually play a game. So I think there's going to be a little bit of rust buildup. There's no question about that. McCambridge and I actually talked about that earlier this week. A break is not uncommon to the Ice Caps because of the regular season schedule. There have been numerous times this year when the Ice Caps have gone 5 days without playing a game. You know, they play, especially at home, they play Friday, Saturday, or Saturday, Sunday here at home, and then quite often they don't play a game until the following week. So it's not something that they're not used to, but like McCambridge said, 6 days, he wouldn't want to go any more than 6 days, that's for sure.
Robin, Ice Caps captain Jason Jaffrey missed the last game of the previous series, and he's listed as day-to-day with an unspecified injury. Do you expect him to play tonight? What's his current status?
Well, you know how it is during the playoffs. The cone of silence is down, and nobody is saying anything other than the traditional day-to-day. We don't know if he's got a broken toenail or a concussion. I mean, it's just one of those things, everybody's hush-hush. I can tell you that he did skate in practice yesterday. That was the first, and the day before. So that's the first time he's been skating in practice, I guess, since last week, because he did miss the practice, the practice last Thursday, a day prior to the series clinching win over Norfolk. And, but he was on the ice yesterday. I mean, to be honest with you, we won't know until the starting lineup is announced, tonight.
Robin, the Ice Caps played the Penguins during the regular season, but the team, the Penguins, have had some significant changes to the roster. Can you tell our listeners kind of about the Penguins and what the Ice Caps need to fear about them most?
Well, I guess there's one interesting stat with the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, and that is that they've allowed the fewest shots on goal of any team in the American Hockey League this season. So they don't give you a whole lot. They keep you on the outside. They're very big on blocking shots. There's some familiar players. Peter Menino, the goaltender for the Penguins, he's the guy that Wilkes-Barre's been riding through the postseason. He, of course, was Winnipeg property and was a member of the St. John's Ice Caps in their first year, 2 years ago. He was traded in midseason, so there is some familiarity there. Also, Spencer Mihacek, who did play a little bit in Winnipeg 2 years ago, he's a member of that team as well. They've got some very, very good hockey players. I guess first and foremost, Brian Gibbons, who spent a fair sum of time in Pittsburgh this year. Gibbons is so good, in fact, that he was used on Sidney Crosby's line there for a little while, while with the parent club. An interesting guy is a chap by the name of Connor Sheary. He was signed to an amateur tryout by Wilkes-Barre. He captained the University of Massachusetts Amherst this year. And he's only a little guy. He's listed as 5'9", which means he's probably shorter than that. But he's been averaging a point a game through the postseason for Wilkes-Barre. They're also very deep on defense. Brian Dumoulin, who played a little bit in Pittsburgh this year, he's a highly thought of prospect. Simon Dupre, former World Junior guy for Canada, he's also considered a prospect for the Penguins, and they've got some experience back there too with Brendan Mickelson, who's been around a little bit. So, you know, Wilkes-Barre is very strong, but so are the Ice Caps. The Ice Caps are, you know, they've got a lot of depth. I think the difference in the two teams is the goaltending. Myself personally, I think Hutchinson is a better netminder right now, and he's got the numbers to prove it. But of course, you know, it's all on paper. It's played on the ice, as you know.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Our guest is Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram, talking about the Ice Caps and the Penguins. Game one of the Eastern Conference Final in the AHL goes tonight on the Rock. Robin, you look at the Ice Caps roster, and they've relied very heavily on both Andrew Gordon and Eric Odell to be their goal scorers during these playoffs. Gordon has 6 goals, Odell has 7. Actually, all of Odell's points are goals. 7 goals, 0 assists for 7 points. Next highest on the Ice Caps is Jerome Sampson with 3 goals. Can the Ice Caps continue to be successful with only Gordon and Odell being the primary goal scorers?
I know, but you know the thing is, they're getting goals across the board. There's no big numbers jumping out other than, as you mentioned, Andrew Gordon and Eric Odell in the series clincher over. It just seems like that they're getting key goals from different guys all playoff long. You know, I mean, there was just this past, as I mentioned, the series clinching win over Norfolk their last Friday night. Kyle MacKinnon, he scored the game winner. That was his first goal of the playoffs. And then, of course, we have people like Ben Chiarot, the defenseman, chipping in. And you know, but you're right. The bottom line is, as McCambridge says, you want your best players to be your best players in the playoffs. And while someone of John Albert's ilk is playing well, he's scoring chances, he's getting the shots on goal. There's not a lot of production. At the end of the day, there's not a lot of production there. So, you know, they do need to get someone like Albert. He's got to get going for sure. And not to pick on John Albert, but, you know, certainly he's one name that stands out.
Robin, we were talking last segment about Josh Morrissey, kind of from a futuristic point of view. Where could he play? You know, could he possibly play in the Jets next year? And how has he looked? We haven't seen him firsthand like you have. How has Josh Morrissey looked so far in the playoffs?
Real good. Real good. He is he's it's hard to believe the way he plays. He has so much poise. He doesn't panic. It's really hard to believe he's just 19 years old. He just seems to be making all the right plays all the time. You know, he's had his moments. There was the second game in Albany in the first round series. He didn't play well at all. He was directly responsible for one goal and, you know, just had himself a pretty shaky game. But you know what? He just rebounds from that and just wipes clean slate and starts playing again. He's on the Ice Caps first power play. He just makes these real nice heady moves all the time. I can think of one play while he was on the power play there. He was getting ready for a shot. Guy came out and dropped down as they all seem to do these days. Everybody's blocking shots. Mm-hmm. And he just skated around the guy and got a shot on goal. It didn't result in a goal or anything, but it was just a real nice little heady play. No big deal, but when you consider that this guy is just 19 years old and played junior this year, it's just an example of the poise that he shows on the ice. He's a remarkable skater, and you couple that with his hockey smarts and his his all-around skills. You've got to think that he's going to be contending for a job in Winnipeg next season.
Is there anybody, Robin, putting you on the spot a little bit here, but is there anybody that he reminds you of?
Well, you know what? I did a story on him earlier in the playoffs, and I was speaking with McCambridge, and McCambridge, I thought, made a good point. Keith was playing in St. John, New Brunswick, with the Flames when St. John was the farm club of the Calgary Flames. And there was a guy who was similar to Morrissey. He was an offensive defenseman. He was a high first-round draft pick. He had completed his junior season, and he reported to St. John, played a couple of games at the tail end of the regular season, and then jumped into the playoff lineup and didn't look out of place whatsoever. And Derek Morris has gone on to have himself a pretty fine National Hockey League career. Mm-hmm. And you know, Morrissey is of that ilk. He's a he's an offensive defenseman, great skater. You know, he's just who would he remind me of? Oh boy, I tell you what. Well, listen, you know what? If you want to talk just skating, I'm not talking about points or production or anything like that. But when you think of Morrissey skating, someone like Paul Coffey, just that real nice, smooth stride. One of these guys who doesn't really seem to be skating hard, but yet he's faster than anyone else on the ice. Well, and again, that's just from a skating perspective. But in terms of who he reminds me of, holy smokes, that's a tough one. He's not overly physical because he needs to put some meat on those bones, but he's got everything. He's the real deal. Trust me, he's the real deal.
Robin, I think Jets fans that are listening out there are salivating and really excited to hear you compare him even a little bit to Paul Coffey, one of the great NHL defensemen. We wanted to ask you about another young gun for the Winnipeg Jets, 2011 draft pick, Adam Lowry. He's only got in 6 games for the Ice Caps in these playoffs. Has he fallen out of favor with Keith McCambridge? How have you felt that he's played so far in the playoffs so far?
No, he hasn't fallen out of favor whatsoever. He, you know, poor old Lowry, I mean, during the regular season, Lowry was taking the back seat to Brendan Kitchen because Kitchen had himself a great regular season and, in fact, was named to the all-rookie team. But Adam Lowry's had himself a pretty fine season himself. You know, he was on a streak there of 5-6 games when he scored goals. And in the playoffs, no, he missed the first round against Albany. The team was saying because of the flu. I was told privately that it might be tonsillitis. So there was some illness there. It wasn't because he wasn't playing well enough. Lowry plays a key role on this Ice Caps team. He's centering the third line with JC Lippon and Jerome Sampson, and he's one of McCambridge's go-to guys on the penalty kill. He's a real solid penalty kill guy, and he gets some power play minutes as well. Lowry's very tall; he's like 6'4", and he camps himself in front of the net as a screen to opposing goaltenders. So Lowry is I think is going to need another year of seasoning in the American Hockey League, but you're going to see Adam Lowry in the Winnipeg Jets jersey. There's no question about that. He's a real fine player. There's nothing in his game that you would look at and say, oh boy, that he really needs to work on that. He's a good skater. He gets involved physically. He shows some production around the net. He's solid defensively. No, he's a pretty fine hockey player, and he will be in Winnipeg eventually.
I think he takes from his dad.
Yeah, no question. Hey, he's got good bloodlines for Dave Lowry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Played a long time in the NHL.
Robin, we'll let you go on this last question. Of course, it's the typical one when you're previewing a series. Your prediction on what happens between the Ice Caps and the Penguins.
Well, you know something, I really like the Penguins lineup. Now it's different. We saw Wilkes-Barre here in St. John's there back earlier in the season, but it's a bit of a different lineup because they've got guys back from Pittsburgh. They're like St. John's, they're pretty deep. But I like the way the Ice Caps are playing. McCambridge is rolling 4 lines. They're getting contribution from the back end, and Hutchinson has been lights out. And I think it's going to go far. It's going to go 6 or maybe even 7 games, but I think in the end it's the Ice Caps goaltending. And listen, we all know how important goaltending is in these playoffs. I guess we're probably seeing it in the New York Montreal series, but I'm going to go with St. John's in 7 games.
Robin Short covers the St. John's Ice Caps for the St. John's Telegram. He's a frequent guest on this program. Robin, appreciate your time as always.
Hey, no troubles. A lot of fun anytime, guys.
Take care, Robin. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Robin.
Thanks.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we head out to New York City. Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post is set to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down here is Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That means there's still 2 hours to go
till we go to the patio.
You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and producer Tim getting us on and off the air like the expert that he is.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to New York City, where we're joined by Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post. Sean is covering the Rangers and Habs series. And Sean, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing?
We're doing very well ourselves. Thanks very much for joining us. Another day off in this series. It seems like the first four games in this series have taken about 8 months to play. But finally, after three games, it seems like we really do have some hate between these two teams, thanks to Brandon Prust and Derek Stepan's fragile jaw, I guess, if you want to put it that way. is it finally now feeling like a series, a playoff series, with all the emotion and everything involved in it?
Yesterday was interesting because it was a lot of passive aggression. It started off with Alain Vigneault holding his off-day press conference, And announcing, which is odd for a hockey coach to announce this, that Stepan had broken his jaw. I mean, as everybody is well aware, at this time of year in hockey, usually if somebody's lost a finger, they'll call it a lower body injury. Very cloak and dagger. So for him to come out, that was obviously maybe a little bit of saber rattling, knowing that Brendan Prust had a hearing with the league. Maybe trying to up the number of games Prost would have to miss. And then Michel Therrien coming out after, saying he thought it was a good hit. And that, if anybody knows what it's like to lose a player, it's the Montreal Canadiens who lost Carey Price. And isn't that unfortunate? So whether it's hate yet, I'm not sure. Because, Montreal just emerged from the Boston series. And that was hate. That was visceral hate. I mean, you had people squirting water bottles, spearing each other in the crotch. You had people, an alleged death threat. So I don't know if we're at that level yet, but it seems like they're at least on track.
Well, Sean, you look at the Rangers, and talk about the Habs in a second, but you look at the Rangers and they don't really do anything to get you motivated like that. And I think that's probably part of their plan. Do you think that Vigneault is going to, he has that kind of tone about him. He makes these casual remarks, but is that part of the plan of the Rangers? Because it's not really the kind of a Glenn Sather way of doing things.
No, I mean, the Rangers, the reason they were so successful in the first two games was because, they avoided that. They used a lot of speed. They happened to also knock out one of the best goaltenders in the world, so that all helps. Mm-hmm. It felt like in Game 3 that the Canadians had used that Bruins series as their spirit animal for this game. Like, it was ugly, it was chippy, there wasn't a clean goal that was scored. Markov's was the only one that didn't seem to bounce off somebody's backside and into the net. It seemed like the Canadians actually incited that sort of game, and potentially, I think, maybe threw the Rangers off.
Sean, you mentioned the Brandon Prust suspension. He got a couple games. We wanted to ask you about the Daniel Carcillo suspension. He ended up getting 10 games for abuse official. I guess two-part question. Did you agree with the 10-game suspension that was given by Stefan Quintel and his staff? And do you think that's going to have any impact on this series, or is Carcillo someone who really they're not going to miss?
Two things. I think if Daniel Carcillo went missing for 30 games or 30 years, it's something that I don't know how many people would miss. I mean, on the ice. I'm not being threatening the guy. It's just on the ice, if he were to disappear, nobody would miss him. I don't think ever. So that's one thing. Now, in terms of the suspension, you don't hit the official. Yeah. That's like, you don't hit the quarterback with the red jersey. It's a thing. There's rules. There's precedent. You don't do it. It's stupid. And he did, which was stupid. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. I guess it's been reported he's appealing the suspension. I don't know on what grounds. He clearly elbowed the official. 10 games is fine. That means, if you do your math, I don't think he could appear again until, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yep, that's right.
Pretty cool with that, actually. And whether Montreal or New York is going to miss either of these players, really, I think Montreal would probably miss Prust a lot more. Mm-hmm. He's still a fourth liner, but he's a pretty useful fourth liner.
Well, you mentioned, that they might not miss Brandon Prust, Sean. Is the expectation coming out of Montreal that Bornival is going to go in for Prust?
I'm sorry?
is the expectation that with Brandon Prestout, Michael Bournival is going to go in? Is that what you're hearing out of the Habs camp?
Yeah, the Canadians haven't gone on the ice yet. They're on the ice in about 90 minutes. The Rangers just stepped on the ice, so we'll get a better idea of where Therrien's going to go. I mean, that would be one. And again, I think Prust has been averaging, what, like maybe 9 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. So it's not the hugest hole to fill. Maybe it's more the role that, you know, you'll be curious because he is a bit more of a physical presence. I think the Canadians, you know, will give a hint when they're on the ice at 1 o'clock Eastern.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Sean Fitzgerald of the National Post, who's joining us from New York City, where he's covering the Habs and the Rangers series. Sean, you know, we'll be talking a lot about the Rangers and their injuries. You got Stepan now with the jaw, and, you know, obviously Derek Brassard has still been out. We're not sure if he's going to check back in for game four. I guess we'll know more after they skate this morning. You know, if he's not able to go, how are the Rangers going to shift everything around, or, you know, what's the best bet for how the Rangers are going to try and fill the voids that have been created by these injuries?
Stepan, I guess he was to undergo surgery last night. I don't think he's missed a game in his career, which is kind of remarkable for a 23-year-old. Having broken my jaw, I don't think, you know, you step right back in from surgery. But again, because this is the playoffs, maybe they have them where you're not ruling out the possibility that they have some sort of space age adamantium reinforced sort of helmet with a, you know, a football bar across the jaw. I don't know. That seems unlikely. But, you know, if he is, then, you know, he is one of their most productive forwards. I don't know how you replace that, frankly.
Sean, when you
not at this stage of the season.
When you look at the Habs, though, and the way they've played through these three games, and especially game three, I mean, they win the game, but they give up a lot of odd man chances. And overall, I thought even in game two when they seemed to outplay the Rangers, they had a lot of shots from the outside. What do they have to do differently here to really start to at least get close to playing even or take over a game?
Well, it actually is a trend that, I mean, was really noticeable in the Boston series. That, you know, it's like, you know, I'm from a small town in Ontario where the hockey team hasn't won a Stanley Cup since 1967, and it's been echoes of that in that, you know, the Leafs never seem to get out of their zone for long stretches. Mm-hmm. And against Boston, mm-hmm. Montreal would be hemmed in for an entire shift, and they'd get a quick strike because P.K. Subban would hit, you know, somebody with a fantastic stretch pass through the neutral zone. That has repeated itself a little bit here, even in game three. There were a couple of shifts where, you know, the defensemen just couldn't get out of their zone for a minute and a half and were absolutely exhausted by the time they're getting to the bench. But, you know, the sustained offensive zone pressure by the Rangers, you know, with the speed and with everything that they have up front, I think puts a lot of strain on, you know, Montreal's back end. And you know, if you look at the shot chances, you look at the, you know, the puck possession, mathematically, eventually, you think this is going to start working against Montreal. But because the playoffs is such a small sample size that, you know, they seem to have been dodging and weaving so far. And you know, I don't know how much further they can progress in this series, you know, if that continues. But, you know, it's worked so far.
You mentioned P.K. Subban. He looks tired to me, but also he may be injured. They alluded to it on Hockey Night in Canada. What do you think's going on there?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, everybody could be injured. I mean, you know, it's Thomas Vanek playing with, you know, six broken ribs. Like, is he skating probably? I think because of the time of year, I don't know if anybody's not playing with a knock of some kind. Yeah, Subban could be injured, but he's also playing a ton of minutes and a ton of really difficult minutes because we just talked about it, because, you know, the Rangers flood into the offensive zone, and just as the Bruins did after, you know, pounding on the forecheck for seven games. So, you know, it could be a combination. He could be injured, or he could just be, you know, kind of tired because it's been a heck of a run for him.
Sean, amazingly, we haven't talked that much about good Saskatchewan boy Dustin Tokarski here. You know, 35 saves in Game 3 for his first ever NHL playoff win. I think it's possible that Dustin Tokarski is getting into the heads of the Rangers, specifically Marty St. Louis, who he robbed twice. Or are the Rangers not looking at it like that, and they know that they're going to have to beat him anyway?
It's kind of interesting because, you know, hockey is a relatively small fraternity, so you're always going to know a guy who knows a guy who played against a guy. But with Tokarski, it's, yeah, we know him, but we've never played against him. You know, they have game film of a game he played against Buffalo. And, you know, other than that, maybe they have some film of him playing in the World Junior Hockey Championships in 2009. Like, they just don't know a lot about him. And, you know, you look at him, and he's 5'11". He doesn't fill out a lot of the net. You're like, well, you know, everybody goes big with goalies for a reason. So maybe it's a good thing. You know, he has a lot of experience in a lot of big games, as everybody, I'm sure, across the country has heard ad nauseum. But he really has. Like, he's been at every level, all the way from, you know, basically midget hockey, playing in big games. So it doesn't seem like the stage is really rattling him. And it is a huge stage. Like, there are tons of people every day crowded around in the dressing room asking questions, and he doesn't seem rattled. And, you know, that would be concerning for, I think, any hockey team, because a goaltender who isn't rattled can be a very dangerous thing in the playoffs.
Sean, we'll let you go on this last question. Obviously, Game 4 goes tomorrow night in Madison Square Garden. You know, you mentioned rattled and Tokarski and how solid he looked in Game 1. You know, how crucial is it for the Rangers to get that first goal and sort of, you know, maybe put a dent into that confidence? Because, as you mentioned, this is just a young goaltender playing on a stage he's never played at before.
Sure, and I think with this crowd, too, it's not as loud here as it is in the Bell Center. And they went awful quiet for a long stretch. And I really do think that, you know, as we're talking about guys are playing hurt, guys get tired, that I really don't discount the importance, or at least the, however minor, but noise does have an influence. And yeah, getting the first goal, I'm sure you guys have it handy. I've lost track, but, you know, the teams who have scored first in these playoffs have an unwieldy, huge record of success. I think that's huge. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot more bodies getting in front, making it more difficult, making him really, you know, duck down and peer between legs and try and find the puck through a lot of really sort of activity in front. And I think you're going to see the Rangers come out a lot faster in Game 4 than they did in Game 3.
Sean Fitzgerald is with the National Post. He's covering the Rangers and the Habs in New York, and that's where he joins us from. Sean, thanks very much for doing this.
Enjoy the patio weather.
Will do, Sean. Take care. It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Sean Fitzgerald joining us live from Madison Square Garden, where the Rangers and the Habs are practicing this morning. Before that, big thank you to Robin Short from the St. John's Telegram for joining us to talk about the Ice Caps. In case you missed either of those, they will be available for download on iTunes, on IllegalCurve.com, and of course on TSN1290.ca. Ezzy, you have some forward lines from practice.
Yeah, we were going to have Andrew Gross on today. We have him on a quite regular basis on the show, but unfortunately he couldn't join us because he's at the practice at MSG, so he tweeted out the lines. And, you know, with Daniel Carcillo out now and Derek Stepan out, the lines, it looks like right now they're going to go with JT Miller was called up, so he'll be on the fourth line with Brian Boyle and Derek Dorsett there. The lines, first line will be Pouliot, Brassard, and Zuccarello. That's actually more the second line. I guess it's not in order here. But Brad Richards, Marty St. Louis, and Jesper Faust was the other guy that's called up, played a little bit there in New York. So you've got Jesper Faust, Dominic Moore, and Rick Nash, which looks like that could even be that'll probably be the second line, actually. And then you've got Haglund, Richards, and St. Louis.
That stays together.
That stays together. So, I mean, I guess if you want to call it, there's not really a first line here. No. Stepan is the first line center. So you've got a huge hole to fill there. Dominic Moore, who's been playing third line center, we'll move up essentially to play with Rick Nash. So, I mean, yeah, and he's been playing well. So, I mean, you've got some changes happening there. JT Miller's a young guy who has struggled to stay in the lineup. He's only 20 years old. So, I mean, this is an advantage to Montreal. Derek Stepan, sure. Out of the lineup.
You take that trade every day of the week.
That's one of your top offensive players, and that creates, you know, you talk about, Richie, the center position and how the Blackhawks are having trouble there, and Andrew Shaw's going to have to play second-line center. Here you have Brad Richards, who's been playing mainly on the second line. That essentially becomes your number one line there with Hagelin, Richards, and St. Louis. And we know that the Montreal Canadiens did a pretty good job of shutting those guys down. Marty St. Louis was stymied a couple times in quite spectacular fashion by Tokarski. So, you know, the Rangers' lines are all over the place now. You drop those two guys out of the lineup and people are shuffling around now.
Carcilla, actually, I don't like Dan Carcilla. He plays like a maniac. But he had been effective on the forecheck in his limited minutes that he played. I think Brandon Prest, quickly, guys, before back to those lines, is a very effective fourth-line player. Not only is he a leader in the room.
It's like a Sean Thornton.
He's an excellent skater. For a fighter, he's an excellent skater, and he gets in very hard on the forecheck. I think he's a big loss. But I agree. I think he's a bigger loss than Carcillo by a considerable margin. And I think, obviously, Stepan is even a bigger loss than Press by a considerable margin.
Right. But when you were going through those lines, just so that I recap, do you have Derek Brassard was taking a regular shift there on those lines? Is that right?
Well, and also Brassard's been injured, too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So it sounds like Brassard might check back into the lineup for the Rangers.
And Brassard obviously would allow Brassard to squeeze in between Zuccarello, who I think's played quite well,
and
Benoit Pouliot. That's been a line that Alain Vigneault at times this year called the best line of the team since January. Now, that's kind of been a different story since St. Louis Richards and Hagelin have played quite well together. Kreider's fit in really well on the Stepan Nash line. But you hear the lines that Ezzie mentions there, and I think JT Miller checks in, whatever it may be. You're going to have, I mean, it changes the complexion of your team because of the lack of center position. And, you know, Rick Nash does, one thing to note, though, is that Rick Nash, I mean, Derek Stepan isn't your prototypical playmaking center. He's a shooter. He can create a bit, but Rick Nash doesn't really need, or I don't think has ever really particularly played with or played well. He's played with Richards, played well with a passing center. I mean, like a prolific passing center. He is a guy who likes to have the puck on the stick, drive from the boards, from the right side, plays the off wing.
Use that big body of his.
Use a big body, come from the corner. Like, he's a guy who wants the puck on the stick. He's not a one-shot shooter. We've mentioned that in the show before. So I don't think he'll be as affected by the loss of Stepan as maybe some other players would be. And I think that's a factor. Like, you know, if you had a guy who was a shooter and wasn't playing with, you know, Jeff Carter when he was playing center is more of a shooter. If you're going to take away a playmaking center, it's going to affect him. You know, if you're going to take away Kopitar from Gabrick, it'll affect him. In this case, I don't think it affects him as much, but that will affect the team, and that affects the matchups, because then you're going to see them likely load up against the St. Louis line and say, okay, we'll take our chances with the other lines. We'll take our chances. And the Habs haven't played particularly well in the series. They outplayed the Rangers in game two, but a ton of those shots were from the outside. How the heck the Habs didn't run or try and run Henrik Lundqvist in game two was beyond me. I'm not in favor of injuring anybody, but can you make a little noise in front of the net? Can you maybe go, you know, they just took out your number one netminder, arguably the best goalie in the world, and Kreider's done it before, and you don't even get into Lundqvist's grill. I think that was a mentally weak play by the whole team. Now, they did outplay them, but they took a ton of shots from the outside, and if you're playing against Lundqvist, you're not going to score a ton from the outside, Ezzie.
Oh, they were badly outplayed. I mean,
I'm talking game two when they outplayed them. They didn't get enough great chances. Last game, they were outplayed, and they were lucky to win.
In nine periods, I guess, throw in the overtime and make it 10 or something like that. And the Rangers have outplayed them 7 out of those 10 periods. So, yeah. I mean, that's a compliment to Dustin Tokarski. I mean, they got fortunate goal scoring from Danny Briere and then Galchenyuk in the overtime. But the Rangers were all over the Habs in that game, at MSG. And you look at the line combinations and how they're affected by, you know, this Brandon Prust, Daniel Carcillo, Stepan, you know, trifecta of injuries and suspensions, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a lot easier for the Habs to put in Michael Bornival on that fourth line. He's played well. He was in a regular in the lineup earlier in the series, mm-hmm. and then they ended up putting Travis Moen in and then Galchenyuk in. But you look at their lines, not as affected as much. And I think that, you know, heading into this game, I think, you know, you have a team that's kind of not knowing where their offense is going to come from. Marty St. Louis hasn't got it going here. And, you know, Rick Nash, even though he had a goal, his first goal of the playoffs in game one, I mean, it's not exactly like, you know, Rick Nash is lighting it up here. And, you know, you look at these two teams, and I think this is a series now. I really do. I don't think this is just one win for the Habs. I think, you know, you look at heading into this game, you know, Richie, you mentioned that, you know, they didn't, I guess, respond in a physical sense to Lundqvist. But I think what we saw, I think there is hate on in this series. Mm-hmm. I think we saw that, you know, whether it's the Prust and Dorsett fight, or just the way that these teams are at each other now. And, you know, you could tell the Rangers towards the end of that game, I mean, they scored with 30 seconds left, and the look of disgust on their faces when Galchenyuk scored was evident. And you know, I think that the Habs now, I thought the Gallagher, Desharnais, Pacioretty line was great.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Who else played well aside from those guys? I don't think Desharnais even played that well. But who else played well aside from those guys?
Desharnais had, you remember that one rush, and he cut to the net and made a nice little move. But I thought Pacioretty was good, and Pacioretty had scoring chances. And Gallagher was probably the guy that was the most engaged on the Habs, getting in on the forecheck, causing trouble in front of the net. But yeah, I didn't think Thomas Plekanec had that particularly of a strong game. And, you know, Lars Eller didn't have that particularly of a strong game. And, you know, it's opportunistic scoring. That's what it was for the Habs. I mean, let's not get it twisted here. The Habs were lucky to win that game.
Oh, yeah.
But I think when you get that good of goaltending, and, you know, those opportunities come up, and then you have a Rangers team right now that's missing their first line center, I think, you know, they've got a chance to win in the series. I think they're still, you know, if Carey Price is in this series, I think we have a whole different conversation.
Oh, for sure.
Well, a whole different conversation.
I think that goes without saying. Did you think the hit on Price was dirty?
Price?
Yeah.
Did I think it was dirty? I didn't think it was.
We haven't been on since it happened.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't think it was dirty per se. I thought it was exactly as they said, accidentally intentional.
Reckless?
I thought it was reckless.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that, I mean, he didn't mind hitting Price. But I just think that the Habs should be the same way with Lundqvist. That's
sure.
what I think.
Well, I mean, you mentioned game two and nobody in the Habs that went anywhere near Lundqvist.
Nobody.
You almost have a free shot. Like, there's almost a quid pro quo that, you know, if you can have another similar accidental on purpose
incident.
There's
one problem, Drew.
Go on.
You got to be willing to go to the net.
Well, I mean, Brendan Gallagher is a little rat on the ice. He plays very well, but he's a little rat who's not afraid to mix it up.
If you're Brendan Gallagher, you got to be able to turn the corner on the left defenseman. They're too strong skating wise. You can't turn the corner on McDonough. And you can't turn the corner on Stahl. That's the problem. You want to get to the net, you got to turn the corner, or you got to go between the defensemen. He's not big enough to go between the defensemen. I have great respect for what he does with what the talent that he has, because he's not the best skater, he's not the biggest guy, but he works his butt off.
Yep.
But you got to be willing to go to the net. Thomas Vanek, if he was making any money in the playoffs, would be stealing it. He's been a joke. He's been awful. I mean, he better be losing money every day, because I don't care if he is injured. Can you reach for the puck every once in a while?
Well, if there was any doubt why he started the game on the fourth line, you saw that in that game. He doesn't back check.
He's awful.
He's been bad. I don't think there's any other word for that. He's
losing
been
money day by day.
And he's someone that was brought in to put them over the top. Now he's a guy. I think if Michel Therrien had his really wanted to, I don't think he wants to play him at all.
But you can't. That's the problem, and I agree with that, is that I don't think Therrien wants to play him, but you can't, because the one or two times he does, he can at least score because he's got the hands. You can't. You just don't have the depth.
You don't think he'd rather have Travis Moen out there on the fourth line? I know, but I'm just saying, I think that the way Vanek is not contributing in any way.
Well, he's not a fourth line player. I mean, Vanek shouldn't be on their fourth line. He's ill-suited to be on their fourth line.
I agree. He's got to play. He still has to play, but he's stealing money.
Right. I mean,
he was making it.
Well, he's still getting his power play opportunity, because, I mean...
And that's a factor, too. You know, he's one guy, but, you know, Danny Briere, again, respect for him. He's one of the clutch playoff guys of all time. You look at his stats and look at the way he scored in Game 7. I know the fluke goals in this goal is a fluke goal, but you go to the net or you make a play. He doesn't have it anymore either, guys. So, I mean, you're looking at a lot of guys. Rene Bork was MIA. I saw that guy in the back of a milk carton last game. I mean, so many of these guys who play half the games literally took last game off.
Yeah, he was very good.
Game they ended up winning. Yeah,
very good against Tampa. Very good against Boston.
Well,
that depth.
Rene Bork's career right there in a nutshell. Yeah. Great, great, great. Right. Invisible for the next 20
games.
But
that depth, you know, they've gotten a nice little boost from Galchenyuk, who's only played two games in the playoffs.
Yes.
But, I mean, you know, it's all about the depth here. And we know that the Rangers, they don't have a number one line. And they not only before Derek Stepan, they kind of, dating back to the Flyers series and the Penguins series, they've kind of had, to me, it's almost like they have a fourth line and three second lines.
But Vigneault, like, always likes to roll his lines. He plays these guys 60 and 17 minutes a game. He gets his offensive guys out for the offensive draws. I mean, he does in Vancouver. We know his routine.
Yep.
Right.
It's interesting to see how he's able to motivate here a bit. And he's a hands-off coach, guys. I mean, he lets the players run the room. He's got the vets and the players to do it here. He went to a nice situation. But I'm interested to see how he does and how he deals with the adversity that they're facing now. Because they're not only facing, you know, pressure, they're now facing a short lineup. And he hasn't really had that problem throughout the playoffs.
Let's head to break. When we come back, a little more on the Rangers and the Habs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.